How's it going, folks? And welcome to another episode of HQI Sports. For the show today, we're of course recapping NFL Week 6, as well as previewing Chargers and Cowboys kicking off later tonight. We'll be talking about the biggest upsets we saw in the NFL this past week. We saw a lot of upsets as well. We'll give you a quick Champion Series preview for baseball, as well as talking about the AP 25 for NCAA basketball just released today as well. So much to go over. We're not going to waste any time. Let's get straight into this episode.
Damian Williams runs to immortality and will be remembered forever in the Chiefs kingdom.
He drives one deep left field. That goes Upton. Back near the wall. It's out of here. Bartolo has done it.
Curry way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry.
Thank you guys so much. I love you. Mamba out.
And once again, welcome back to HQI Sports. I'm your host, Josh Hobbs. Joined by my side, virtually this time, not in studio, is my lovely co-host, Parker Hollandoner. Parker, my friend, welcome back to, I mean, my goodness, when's the last time we recorded on a Monday afternoon? But it feels good. I'm feeling good. I've had a really, really long day already, but I'm ready to talk some sports. But before we talk about anything today, Parker, how are you doing today on this fine Monday afternoon?
I'm doing quite well, Josh. I'm a little gassed. Just drove home 4 hours from a little vacation that I let myself go on over the weekend. But now I am settled back in, ready for about 6 hours of work tonight. And then we return to normal life tomorrow, except there's so much work going on this week.
Yeah, we definitely are getting kind of the real senior treatment back up at college, just in terms of how much work we've been doing. But all enjoyable, all a part of the process. And my goodness, the weekend we just had, not even talking about NFL football, but just in terms of our football team, we won't get into really exactly what happened, but definitely some unfortunate news that we got on
Big
Sunday
changes.
Afternoon.
Big changes coming.
Big changes coming, to say the least. But in terms of what we actually are going to be talking about for today's episode, I want to start off with the game happening tonight. We got Chargers and Cowboys kicking off at 8:15 on ESPN for Monday Night Football. Justin Herbert and Dak Prescott, or actually, I like to call this kind of like the Kellen Moore revenge game because we've seen it feels like this whole entire week has kind of been themed in terms of like former coaches going against their former teams. And that's exactly what's happening tonight. But regardless of that, in terms of the game tonight, Parker, just briefly, who do you got coming down on top? You know, who are you feeling is the better team in this one?
See, I know the big storyline for tonight is Austin Ekeler is finally cleared to return. He suffered an ankle injury during the offseason, hasn't been able to play all year, finally making his debut on the season. I don't think he played at all week one, did he?
He played week one, but then that's when he got the injury. He has not
played week one, got banged up. Yeah, but I know the story is going to be him coming back, but I expect him to kind of – this is a rough spot for him to return to. This Cowboys run defense, although I think it is overhyped, I do think it is very, very good. I don't think the Chargers O-line is going to be able to make up for the fact that – I do think that he's going to be on a pitch count today, which means that maybe you run with your number two back a little bit extra. Maybe that all works out. But regardless, I don't know if the Chargers offense is going to look nearly as good. They're still dealing with the loss of Mike Williams. I think, and also, in general, you take the under on a Monday night game. And when it, and if it comes down to a defensive battle, I can't trust that Brandon Staley defense. They can't fit the run for anything. I think Tony Pollard's going to have a heck of a night. And then when it comes down to it, I do like currently the Cowboys wide receiver room more. I don't trust Dak as much as I trust Jay Herbs, but it's close enough because Herbert can't really do anything in a big moment. This might count as a big moment.
Yeah, and I think there's really something to be said that when a team comes off a really, you know, National League loss, a loss that is, you know, kind of felt around the league.
Big-time loss, yeah.
Which is exactly what happened to the Cowboys last week in their loss to San Francisco. I feel like that's always a recipe for them to bounce back the next week. And yep. It's not necessarily a given, but especially going against a Chargers team, they're notorious for not, you know, showing up in the biggest moments. And let me tell you this, even though this game is being played in SoFi, this is a Cowboys home game. Do not get this twisted. Yeah. This is going to be, I would not be surprised if we look up at the stands like in the first quarter of this game and I see 75% Cowboys fans. I mean, that's just kind of the nature of 100%. every home game for the Chargers at SoFi.
Thanks, Thanos. You made it so your team will never have home field advantage again.
Yeah, and I guess look at the matchup just quickly here before I get my prediction. I mean, obviously the quarterback advantage goes to the Chargers, but you 100%. Mentioned it. He's not throwing it. Besides Keenan Allen, he's really losing a lot of his key targets. You mentioned the loss of Mike Williams. We really haven't seen their first-round draft pick, Quentin Johnston, do too much this year. Obviously it's early, but I'd really like to see him get more targets in this game. And although the Cowboys defense definitely got exposed in that loss to San Francisco, the Cowboys defense is still good. Like, they're not like an all-timer, but they're definitely better than the Chargers, who the Chargers have been essentially the worst defense in football since the season started. So I really, it's tough because I don't like picking a team that definitely has the worst quarterback, but it's exactly what I'm going to do here. I'm going to take the Cowboys to win this one on the road, although it's definitely going to be a home game just in terms of, you know, the Chargers. But Cowboys win this one, 27, Chargers 23.
Yeah, you know I'm never happy to call a home win, but I think, or a road win, and specifically, I'm never happy to call a Cowboys win. You know, no one actually wants them to succeed. That said, I don't see any reason to pick the Chargers this week. That could mean it's a trap the other way, but you are right. From a gambler's perspective, Josh, not for no other reason than the logic of it, when you get blown out, you almost always come back the next week and either cover or win. In this case, for Dallas is a 1.5-point favorite. In order to cover, they would need to win. I have them winning this game. I definitely think they make it out. But yeah, that means that the Chargers will fall to 2-3 on the year. They've already had their bye. And
they're on a short week with their next game against Kansas City next week, which is going to be a lovely sight for my team, just to say the least. But you know what? Chargers always play the Chiefs close. But in this game, I do have them losing against the Cowboys. And speaking of losing, I mean, my goodness, we got to move on to our next segment. We had quite the number of losses in this week 6 slate of games for the NFL. Most notably, Philadelphia and San Francisco, the two lone remaining undefeated teams heading into the week, now currently defeated after the Eagles lost to the Jets and 49ers lost to the Cleveland Browns of all teams.
Both to backup quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Zach Wilson is technically
Zach Wilson's
backup.
A backup.
Yeah.
So, do you think he's a starting quarterback in this league, Josh?
I do not. No.
Where you say that Zach Wilson's a bona fide starter?
Tell you what, I will actually tell you later in the episode where exactly I think Zach Wilson will be in one of our new segments. Or I guess all it's right. An old segment making a return. But no, I do not believe Zach Wilson is a starting quarterback. But my question to both of us, which one of the losses, and I'm guessing we're probably talking Eagles and 49ers specifically. Which one of those losses do you feel as though is the most noteworthy heading after this week?
Of those two, I definitely think the Eagles loss means a lot more. The fact that they were held completely scoreless in the second half, I think it says a lot more about the quality of their team. Obviously, I know you had some thoughts about the Chiefs game, how they looked really flat on Thursday. And in a very similar situation, the Eagles, after losing both of their coordinators, seem like they've lost a lot of their identity over the course of this last offseason. Their offense isn't nearly as dominant. A lot of the players that they retained still aren't looking nearly as good. Jalen Hurts is currently, I believe, one of the leading rushers for his team. I think he might have more rushing yards than DeAndre Swift does right now. Like, it's looking a lot like how the Ravens did the year after Lamar's MVP year, is my best way of grounding it. Because it feels like they're entirely dependent on Jalen Hurts to make everything happen without scheming guys open for him when you have plenty of talent around him that should be working great. Obviously, injury plays a factor. Lane Johnson did hurt his ankle and was out for most of the game. But that's not an excuse when your offense is this good to go scoreless in the second half. On the other side of it, if you're the 49ers, obviously you end up going down, scoring nearly 10 points in the fourth quarter. You get that first touchdown. You get the ball back from the Browns. You get the opportunity to kick a game winner. Brock Purdy did enough to win that game, considering that he lost Debo early and Christian McCaffrey around the early third quarter. So, honestly, I don't think this is the anti-Brock Purdy game. I don't think this is the proof that he sucks that a lot of people have been waiting for. But I do think it was a clear off game. The defense did enough to win, and the offense finally fell apart against who is maybe the best defense in football right now, if we're being fair to the Browns, if we're being totally fair. So I don't think the 49ers loss says nearly as much about them as the Eagles loss says about them.
I really couldn't have said that better myself. I think the 49ers game is a little bit more notable than what people are giving it credit for. Obviously, they had the chance to win that game. They just missed the field goal at the end. But This was definitely a subpar game from Brock Purdy. He did lose Debo and Christian McCaffrey. I mean, those are his two best weapons, arguably. And that's definitely going to hurt. But it really kind of cemented, at least my opinion, that Brock Purdy, he is a good quarterback. I am starting to come around on him just a bit, but he's definitely not a top 10 quarterback. He is a good quarterback, but he needs to have that support in order to win games consistently. And this game essentially proves that if he doesn't have his two best guys, I mean, the likelihood of them winning is slim. They can still do it, but it's not as easy for him.
I think his ceiling is top. I think his ceiling is top 12, and I think that is established now.
And
I think the big thing yesterday was he can still make plays, but he needs time to adjust. He needed to get used to not having CMC and Debo back there, because he still got some good tosses to Ayuk and Juwan Jennings. They still looked good. And also, it's worth pointing out, Jake Moody did miss two kicks that game, so he was kind of in his own head, and he's a rookie. So I don't think that happens again. The obvious opposite point of that is Evan McPherson, who 2 years ago was a rookie and looked like the second best kicker in football. So due credit to him. But I think it's totally understandable that a rookie kicker in that position who had already missed a kick earlier in the day probably wasn't in the right headspace. It sucks, but it's what happens.
Yeah, and I feel like the 49ers honestly will be better from this loss. Like, it's a non-conference loss. Like, it's not the end of the world. As for the Eagles, though, I'm not ready to say yet that they fully have taken a step back. I just think they're really, like you said, I think they're really feeling the pain of losing both of their top coordinators, and that should be expected. And you mentioned me and my thoughts on the Chiefs after the Thursday game, and I know I was texting you, like, I didn't really feel as though, I didn't feel like heading into the season that losing Eric Bieniemy was going to be a significant loss. I definitely thought it was a loss, but it wasn't. I felt like, you know, having Matt Nagy behind Bieniemy was kind of going to help soften the blow. I so far have been wrong on that. I feel like Nagy has really struggled in terms of, you know, finding a balance between the Bieniemy play calling and his play calling that kind of fits Mahomes and the whole offense. But looking at the Eagles specifically, when you lose both your offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator, that's when, like, I mean, that's just a lot to overcome. So I do feel like the Eagles will be fine. And I think a lot of people are kind of, you know, putting that blame or putting the loss on Jalen Hurts. Sure. I mean, he definitely didn't have his best game. I'm not honestly too worried about Jalen in this scenario. I'm worried about the defense of the Eagles specifically, because Zach Wilson, he didn't like go crazy on them, but like this defense, you know, week in, week out, you can get yards on them. That's what I keep figuring out is that.
It is worth pointing out that they did have some notable injuries on this game. Most importantly, the rookie Jalen Carter did not play in this game. I do think that is worth at least mentioning.
Yes.
I don't think it's the biggest. I don't think it's the hugest deal of all. But also their number two, number one corner, depending on how you look at it. Darius Slay was also out. So they weren't nearly at full strength. That's not an excuse. You should still absolutely destroy the Jets.
Yeah.
But I do think that there is an explanation for Jalen Carter looked like defensive rookie of the year through the first 5 weeks. And Darius Slay, we all know, is a very, very competent cornerback. Makes $100 million for a reason.
Yeah, it's definitely noteworthy. There's just teams in the league. And honestly, both of these teams. It's like, there's just certain teams where you're just like, no matter who you put on the field, you gotta beat them. Like, and I know obviously Cleveland has arguably a top two defense in the NFL right now. You still got to beat the Browns, because the Browns, like, you have to beat the Browns. Same thing goes with the Jets. Like, I made this reference to one of my friends after the Eagles lost. I was like, I basically compared it. It's like losing to the Jets is basically like going to the bar and then coming home with a two. It's like, do I really, like, oh, it's like, of all things to do, like,
we can really say that. Dang.
Yeah. 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 but you know what I mean? So
what did you do on Saturday? Gosh.
I was not doing that. I was not doing that. But in terms of both teams going forward, I do think they're going to be fine. I wouldn't be surprised if both these teams were 1-2 in the NFC, you know, come the end of the season. But in terms of right now, the 49ers are 100% a better team than Philadelphia. But I think both of these losses now cement the fact that the Chiefs are the best team in football. That's my ultimate takeaway. What other team could actually compete with Kansas City right now? I mean,
you put up 19 on the numerically worst defense in football.
We're 5-1 in the AFC, and our only loss was to Detroit, who's also 5-1, and we didn't have our two of our three best players. I mean, I feel like that's a completely reasonable spot to be in right now.
You really don't think the Dolphins are better than you right now?
No, absolutely not. Their defense is trash.
Really?
Compared to our defense, the Chiefs, here's the thing. The Chiefs offense has not clicked yet, and that's what people are very concerned about. I, for one, as a Chiefs fan, I'm not saying it's not like something you should be just completely concerned about, but I think it's definitely something to be notable. Here's the thing. The Chiefs offense is going to figure itself out. I am not worried about that. It has not looked to the part of what the Chiefs offense is typically looking like. I will admit that. Here's the thing, though. This Chiefs defense has literally never been better than what it is right now under Mahomes' era.
That
and
is
also,
fair.
Before I go off, before I talk about defense quickly, the offense for the Chiefs as of right now, in terms of points scored throughout the first 6 weeks and the average margin of victory in those first six games, never been higher for the Chiefs, and they've scored the exact same amount of points that they've scored last season throughout the same amount of time. So the offense is exactly the same compared to last year. It just looks entirely different in some aspects.
Well, you know what the good news is?
Concerned.
The good news for both of us is that we all know who the best team isn't in the AFC right now, and it's the Bills. So thank God they're bad. The Bills are bad.
It's not
man.
Buffalo.
The Bills are the roughest 4-2 I've seen in a minute, and that's including the Ravens, who are also 4-2 right now.
It should have been. I mean, I was watching part of that game last night, and I mean, Josh Allen just. I mean, he misses Brian Daboll so much. Did you see the video of him leaving the stadium with Daboll? He literally can't. Like, he has to be near him. He's so he has to be around Daboll at all times. It's ridiculous.
Because he sucks without him.
Yeah. But to my point, the Chiefs are the best team in the NFL. Like, that should be pretty much a given. I mean, Miami, yeah, they put up 70 on the Broncos. Who cares? But, yeah, the Chiefs are number one. Eagles and 49ers lose in week six. So definitely, I think the standings, or at least the hierarchy of NFL teams, I think is starting to kind of, you know, take more of a shape.
It's solidified.
But definitely still a little bit of wiggle room still amongst, you know, some of the, you know, the topper teams as well. We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, we'll be discussing the MLB Championship Series for both leagues, as well as giving you a brief little update as the AP 20 Top 25 for college basketball was just released this afternoon. Stay tuned. Baseball is back, or should I say getting close to the end, as the championship series is starting underway. We had the Rangers and Astros go at it last night, Rangers getting the 2-0 victory over Houston in game one. Then we got Phillies and Diamondbacks kicking off tonight. I do not know what time, but we got both of those series going on at the same time. 8 p.m., thank you. So just quickly, I just want to go over both series, as I know we did our predictions before the playoffs started. I would say my predictions have gone actually fairly well. The only team I was completely
better
wrong
than mine.
On, yours. I mean, oh my god, actually, we haven't even had a chance to talk about it yet. Do you want to give a little quick little Orioles rant, because I know there's some stuff you want to say.
Look, it's okay. Like, obviously, I was projecting. I was shooting a little too high with a first-year team that hasn't been to the playoffs in almost 10 years going all the way to the World Series and winning it all. Obviously, and that was my fandom showing, and I get that. I'm all good with it. The Brewers pick was atrocious, and I just got to let that one die. But in terms of the O's, I'm honestly totally – it sucked in the moment. That was also the weekend that the Ravens lost to the Steelers. So that was just a bad weekend to be from Baltimore. It was a bad time. But in terms of the Orioles, like, there's so much optimism going forward that it really can't suck that much, because at the end of the day, the majority of the core is locked up for the next 4 years because of rookie contracts, plus eventually getting enough money to extend them once the team hopefully gets sold. Thank God. John Angelo's leave as soon as possible. I'm really good friends with your niece, but come on. dude, it's a mess. But in terms of the team itself, we have one of the best managers in baseball. They have one of the best managers in baseball. Like, arguably top five, if not higher, in terms of Brandon Hyde. Makes great lineups to win any game. And every single position has one or two options that can play everything well. As long as they improve the pitching just a little bit, I think the leaps that a bunch of guys are about to take is going to be great.
Well, in terms of you, like, you're potentially losing to the Rangers, who, I mean, they've already won game one against Houston, but because I had Houston going to the World Series, but you're potentially losing to the World Series, you know, representative of the American League. So
people get really angry. People really, like, I've never understood this. People root against the people who knock out their teams from the playoffs. I always root for, like, when the Ravens when Lamar had his MVP year and then the Titans knocked him out, I was like, hey, Titans win the Super Bowl, this doesn't look so bad. Right. So, hey, if the Rangers win it all, I'm happy, because that means that the Orioles look like they only lost to the team. Like, maybe the Orioles could have beaten the Astros in this series. Maybe.
Well, and let me tell you this. How long the team will be good. I feel much more confident about the Orioles going forward than I do about the Rangers. Let me just say that right now.
Yeah, that's fair.
Although
Josh Jung is really good.
No, yeah, he's really good. But in terms of this series, I still have Houston coming out on top. I mean, it obviously couldn't it might not happen, but I still have Houston winning this series against Texas. And then Phillies Diamondbacks is very interesting to me. I'm based on where I'm living at, just in my current residence, I am literally constantly – and I mean constantly, surrounded by Phillies fans. And it's pretty hard not to look at that series and just see that. I mean, Phillies got easily the most momentum of any team left in the postseason. So it's hard to root against them, or at least the
Phillies should sweep. Phillies should sweep.
It should be, but then again, the Diamondbacks have kind of been the team of, like, they're the underdogs of the whole postseason. I mean, I had them, I think, losing in, like, the first round of the playoffs, and now they're here. So I'm not going to rule them out, but I am going to have Phillies and Houston come out of these two championship series, and I'm still going to roll with Houston to win it all. I'm a big believer in teams that have been there, done that, have the experience. I mean, I don't know if you've been watching Yordan Alvarez this whole entire postseason, but my goodness, that man can hit a baseball. I mean, just absolutely beautiful. So I'm going to roll with Houston. I'm not sure who you're going to be picking, but let me who do you got coming out of the series?
Well, let's just say this. If the Diamondbacks find a way to win this series, then whoever makes it out of the AL is going to win in four or five games. That much is very clear to me.
I would agree with you on that.
I don't think the Diamondbacks are capable of winning the World Series this year as much as I think they are really, really good. I don't have a bad thing to say about them. But when it comes down to it, what we have learned over the past two seasons, Josh, there is one immutable takeaway. A lot of people can take away different opinions, different takes. But one thing is for sure true. This Phillies team is built for postseason baseball. They're not a great regular season team. They're not going to dominate you anytime between the months of April to September.
Yeah.
They're never going to dominate you. But when that October baseball hits, they're going to clap you and they're going to do it with force. Bryce Harper has returned to like maximum possible form. Kyle Schwarber's looked really, really good on the pitching side. Oh no, he's not a pitcher. I'm an idiot. I was looking at Zach Wheeler's name, but Kyle Schwarber's numbers. Kyle Schwarber's been batting incredibly so far. And then, of course, we're not going to talk about what world events are going on, but certain world events are happening, which means Nick Castellanos is as hot as he's ever possibly been.
Oh, my God.
it doesn't make me happy, but it's true. Like, come on. It can't be a coincidence anymore. It's impossible.
I mean, hey, anything in baseball is possible, but that is an absolutely crazy shout.
Yeah. Alec Bohm. I mean, even Trey Turner down the stretch. That, again, we never talked about it on the show. Did you see that whole thing where Phillies fans, like, mobilized to give him a standing ovation when he was in the middle of his hitting slump?
Probably not.
So he was in the middle of, like, a two-month slump. He had gotten all this money in the offseason, was projected to be, like, the best shortstop in baseball, shortstop, second baseman, etc. And he was supposed to be one of the best and was terrible for the first two or three months. Like, and you can't dance around it. He was awful. And some Phillies fans on social media, a couple like the super viral ones, started this movement to say, hey, when he's up to bat tonight, let's give him a damn standing ovation. Like, let's show him that we're still here for him. Philly fans are supposed to be mean, but like, let's show him some love. And when that happened, he had one of the best nights of his career. I think he hit a homer in his first at bat when that happened. And he's been really good ever since. It's one of the best stories in baseball right now. It's been great. But he's been really, really solid down the stretch. I don't see any reason that – I mean, Zach Gallen is a good pitcher to start for the Diamondbacks tonight. He's already got two wins in the playoffs because of the wild card series as well. But when it comes down to it, I think the Phillies make it out of this. And I don't know how the World Series goes anymore, but I think at this point it has to be their year.
I think I think if Houston is not coming out of the ALCS, I will have the Phillies winning it all. But I don't trust.
You think the Rangers fall apart?
I think the Rangers, they do beat the Astros. I do not think they beat the Phillies. I do have the Phillies beating the Diamondbacks in the NLCS. I don't trust Philly against Houston. That's my biggest thing, because Houston has so much more experience than Philly does just in recent seasons. So that's why I have Houston going out on top. But
that's fair.
We got to move on to our last thing before we get on to trivia here. We just had, just this afternoon, we had the releasement of the AP 25 for the start of the college basketball season coming up in just a few weeks. And my personal team, Kansas, is at number one to start off the year, feeling very, very good about that. Parker, I know you're not the biggest college basketball fan, so I can.
But I still love it.
No. I'm trying to get you a little bit more. I'm going to get you more involved in college basketball this particular year. I promise you. But in terms of just the AP 25 releasement, is there any teams or any players that you feel as though are, you know, incorrectly ranked, or what's just kind of your initial reaction to, you know, looking at the top 25?
My initial reaction is Michigan State might keep falling. I think that is such a volatile yes. situation that they fell from the last. So like, they were on the way too early poll as the number one. Obviously, they're down to four now. I think there's a good chance they keep falling. I would say don't count UConn out just because they've fallen all the way down to six. Coaches have them at five, but AP has them at six. I think the reigning champions need to get a little bit more respect. It's a great, they're not a great player program. They're a great program program. So that is something I think is something always dangerous in this very one and done centric world. You know that I'm not anti one and done, but I do think that it has changed the way we have to look at the sport. Yes.
Yep.
And then also the biggest thing to pay attention to is all the one seeds from last year, where they've ended up, specifically Gonzaga and Arizona. Well, Gonzaga wasn't a one seed last year, but they pretty much always are. But Arizona was, and they're down to 11 and 12. I think at that point, those are some programs that you have to at least keep an eye on. Man, look at UNC. Look at UNC down there at 19. What is happening? And then USC being on here at all is just insane to me after that great, great season they had last year. I think that's good. But, I mean, overall, I like the rankings. Obviously, I don't think I have Kansas winning at all this year, but I wouldn't be shocked if they do.
No, and they definitely have just, you know, starting five-wise, Kansas has the best team in basketball. I mean, they bring back DeJuan Harris. They bring back KJ Adams. They bring back, oh my goodness, they bring back Kevin McCullough as well, which they did not expect to have back. And they bring in McDonald's All-American, El Marco Jackson, who, according to some some preseason NBA drafts for next year, because he's going to be a one and done this year, already projected as a top 10 pick in next year's draft. And then you add in the number one transfer portal prospect in Hunter Dickinson at the 5'7", shooting over 40% from three. I mean, that starting five is just absolutely money. The team that I'm really interested to see, especially how they start compared to how they finish, is Kentucky. They got them ranked 16 in both polls. They have brought in some talent that is, I mean, they have some guys that could easily go top 10 in the draft, as well as bring in some transfers as well. There's this guy they got from, like, some foreign country. I can't remember his name at all. But he's, like, a 7'1", like, center who can, like, I mean, he basically plays like Wimby. Like, it's just crazy. Kentucky has one of the most interesting lineups.
You don't mean Aaron Bradshaw.
No, not Aaron Bradshaw.
Oh, no. Okay. Zvonimir Ivy.
That's the guy.
There it is. He's from Croatia.
Yeah, apparently this guy can either be like just a complete bust or maybe like the best player in college basketball. So I'm excited to see how Kentucky plays. I mean, Kentucky is notorious for bringing in just, you know, completely new teams every year and letting John Calipari kind of sort out all the details.
Oh my God, that's so many first years.
Yeah, like that's Kentucky like every single season. They have
four seniors on the whole roster. Crazy.
The last team I want to bring up is Houston, because they are joining the Big 12 this year. I mean, they have had such an incredible run in the last like 6 to 7 seasons, just having continuous top 25 programs. Now that they are playing in the Big 12 and not the AAC, it's going to be interesting to see how they fare up against some, you know, better competition, you know, later in the year. But I'm really excited to see how college basketball plays out this year. There's some really good, this is like the ultimate year for big men. There's so many good big men in basketball this year. I mean, Hunter Dickinson, obviously. You got Zach Edey returning to Purdue. That's why they're up so high. Kyle Filipowski for Duke. Everyone thought he was going to be leaving to go to the draft after last year, but he stays with Duke this year. I mean, it's going to be a really fun year of college basketball. I'm excited to get it kicked off in just a few short weeks, but we are running a little short on time, so it is time for trivia, as I have got Parker's question for today's episode.
Basketball. I'll perish.
No. It is not college basketball. We're going back to football for this one. So, Parker, here is your trivia question today. So, name of Raheem Mostert had quite the week last week, scoring 3 touchdowns in that win over Carolina. So far this year, he has scored 11 total touchdowns in the first 6 weeks.
He's looked real good.
9 rushing, 2 receiving. He leads the NFL so far this year in total touchdowns scored. The only player since the 1970 merger with more touchdowns in the first 6 games of a season than Mostert is who? And I will give you a hint. It is in 2005, and they won the MVP.
05 MVP. Oh, it's AP then. Adrian Peterson?
No.
No. Who's that? Who's that era? 05. It's a running. That's got to be a running back. No, Jerry Rice wasn't playing. No, what? Jerry Rice was still playing. That was Jerry Rice?
No.
Okay. It's the running backs from that era. What other running backs have won MVPs? Oh. See, that Cowboys guy's jumping out to me, but I'm pretty sure he was from the 90s. AFC or NFC?
That is a great question. Let me actually figure that out real fast.
Okay. If you don't know, then it's probably NFC.
It is NFC.
Yep. No, if he ends up winning the MVP. Oh, I feel like there was a running back for the Eagles that won MVP, and I can't think of who it is. But no. Any other hints?
I believe it was his fifth year in the league when he had the record.
That's tough. 05 is rough. I don't know why the name why Jerome Bettis is jumping into my head, but I don't think that's right. Oh, this is gonna bother me. Once you say it, I'm gonna know it, and it's gonna annoy the heck out of me.
It is. I will say this: he's from the. Yeah. He played for the NFC West.
NFC West. There's Rams. Oh, the Rams did have a really good running back during that Kurt Warner era, but that might not have been it. Not Marshawn Lynch. Oh my God. Oh, who was the great Seattle running back before Marshawn Lynch? I know the team. I know it's Seattle. I just can't think. Oh. See, when I think Seattle, I think like so many other players. Oh,
I need an answer, Parker.
Give it to me. I'm picturing his face.
I know you're right.
Not
there.
Dante Culpepper.
It is Sean Alexander.
Sean Alexander, you jerk,
dude. Yeah. 2005. What a season! Listen to this stat line: 370 carries, 1,880 yards, and 27 touchdowns. That is insane.
Sean Alexander was great.
Congratulations to Sean Alexander. That is one of the craziest.
And he's not even the best running back in his team's history, which is crazy.
No. Well, I mean, for that season, he definitely was, but not all time. Okay, we're going to take a short break here on H-Squad. When we come back, I'll be unveiling an old segment that I'm kind of rebranding as a new segment, revealing my top quarterbacks in league as well as my worst quarterbacks in the league. With 6 weeks nearly completed in the NFL, it is time to bring back a segment that used to be in every single one of our episodes that is now making its return to HQI Sports. It was the Hobbs's quarterback hierarchy. That is a working title. There will be a new title the next time this segment goes into place. But just quickly, a little brief introduction of what this segment is. I have basically given each individual. I've aligned each quarterback, each starting quarterback that began the season in the NFL, besides Aaron Rodgers because he got injured. I've basically aligned each one of these quarterbacks into their separate tier in terms of where I feel as though they rank in terms of where they stack up amongst all the individual quarterbacks in the NFL this season. Without further ado, I'll just get started at the bottom of the tier list. And this the bottom tier for this week, because each week these tiers are going to be changing names. So this is own individual week's names for the tiers. So the bottom tier for this week, starting it off, we got the seek help tier, Parker. These are the quarterbacks that these teams, they're seeking help. They know these quarterbacks are not long term answers, and they know the season has basically no future after week 7 or week 8, which is basically the next few weeks. So they're seeking help, and the quarterbacks in this tier are Desmond Ridder of Atlanta, Matt Jones for New England, Zach Wilson for New York, and Bryce Young for Carolina. The one quarterback, obviously, I feel like is a little bit harsh as of right now, is Bryce Young. But as he's still winless in the NFL, we gotta see a lot more from him. And frankly honest, Parker, what I have seen from Bryce Young has concerned me. It's exactly why I did not have him as my QB1 on my depth chart heading into the draft. I had CJ Stroud, which I'm very proud to say. So we gotta see more from all these quarterbacks if they ever want to have future starting jobs in the NFL. Next tier, which is also the biggest tier in this week's list, is the We're Hoping tier. These are teams that are hoping their quarterbacks can outperform their expectations heading into the year, or hoping that they can kind of turn a corner midway through the year as of right now. So for this year, we've got Josh Dobbs, Justin Fields, Jordan Love, Russell Wilson, Sam Howell, Daniel Jones, Kenny Pickett, Anthony Richardson, Ryan Tannehill, and Derek Carr. That's a lot of names.
Good question.
Or go ahead.
So is this for this season, or is this going forward in general?
This is at this point in the season how I see them right now. These can change fairly quickly depending on how they play in the future weeks, but this is how I see them right now.
All right, because as you know, Anthony Richardson was my QB1 coming out of this rookie class, and he's got injury concerns, but I think what we've seen right now is he has at least the second biggest upside of these rookie quarterbacks, CJ Stroud there, that's almost a not fair standard. CJ Stroud looks amazing.
Well, and the reason why I have Anthony Richardson in that tier specifically called We're Hoping, the Colts are hoping that Anthony Richardson can stay healthy because when he's on the field, he looks very good.
If that's your only concern, that's my only concern.
No, I think when Anthony Richardson is healthy, he looks like the second best quarterback in this draft class, which is not disrespect because CJ Stroud is
incredible.
Just making
sure we're on the same page there. Yeah.
All right. So
everything else I like.
Okay. Next tier above We're Hoping is could we be better? I mean, and this is more for the team aspect. Like they look at these quarterbacks and be like, we kind of like what we got. Like we're kind of locked into some of these quarterbacks long term. But could we be better? That's kind of the theme of this category. So we have Deshaun Watson, Geno Smith, Matthew Stafford, Kirk Cousins, C.J. Stroud, Jimmy Garoppolo, Dak Prescott, and Baker Mayfield. The one quarterback that actually is a little bit outlier from that tier is C.J. Stroud. Because honestly, I think the Texans are more saying could we be better in terms of their own team right now. I don't think they expected to have this much success heading into the season, but now they sit 3-3 coming off that victory over New Orleans. And C.J. Stroud has looked pretty much phenomenal. I mean, obviously had that consecutive pass streak that got broken in the Saints game, but so far has been really, really impressive so far.
Objection, Your Honor. Objection, Your Honor. What is Jimmy Garoppolo doing in this year? We're going to
objections at the end of the segment. That's
fine.
The
rule. I'm going to let you know that one's coming in hot.
All right,
at the
fine.
Beginning.
We can make a note of that.
Go ahead.
We have our own separate tier in terms of one particular quarterback. We have a Brock Purdy tier. I honestly don't know what to do with him, so he's going right in between could we be better and this upcoming tier. But Brock Purdy is his own separate outlier. I honestly, sometimes he looks like
you
a top five quarterback. Sometimes he looks like a bottom 20 quarterback. I mean, it's hard to tell with Brock Purdy week to week, so, and especially coming off that loss to Cleveland where he completed just 12 passes. I'm going to give him his own separate tier because we still are a little bit indecisive on what to do with Brock Purdy. The next tier above Brock Purdy is we can compete with anybody. Any one of these quarterbacks, any given week, can compete with any team in the league. We've got Tua Tagovailoa, Lamar Jackson, Trevor Lawrence, and Jared Goff. Now, for one, if anyone's been listening to me for the duration of HQI, you know I've been a very, very loud Jared Goff doubter. He has very much surprised me. Ever since he basically left Los Angeles and got out of to Detroit, it hasn't been perfect. But especially this season, Dan Campbell and Ben Johnson have really made sure that they're putting him in the best scenarios possible in order for them to get the best results out of Jared Goff, and that is why he's so high on this list.
My greatest take of all time.
In terms of the top tier quarterbacks in the league, I do think he is the worst. But in terms of where Detroit is right now and how Jared Goff has been playing, I really can't put him any lower than what he is right now. So he is going to be as of right now in the tier of we can compete with anybody. Now, the top tier for this week's edition of Hobbs Quarterback Hierarchy. We win because of these players, because these players can go out no matter how poor their team might perform in any given week. They can still win because they have these guys at quarterback. Obviously, number one, you got Patrick Mahomes. After him, you have Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, and Justin Herbert. It's kind of the J-themed category I like to think of. But you can basically win any game of any given week because you have these quarterbacks on your roster, and that is the full hierarchy for after six completed games in NFL after tonight. These are my top quarterbacks and bottom quarterbacks in the NFL. Now, Parker, your turn for objections, concerns, criticisms, but I think it's a fairly untouchable list if you ask me.
I think it's really solid. I think you're falling into a couple of the same traps as a lot of other people who do our job. The biggest one is, I don't know, are these in order? Are these tiers somewhat in order?
The players, I have it on the list here. The players that are in the particular tiers are in no particular order.
Okay. Because I don't know if I have Josh Allen minus Brian Daboll in we win because of us. I think he might be we win because of anybody, but I would swap him with Trevor Lawrence personally. And then I would argue Justin Herbert and Lamar should maybe be swapped up because Justin's looked meh in the playoffs, but so is Lamar. So I'm cool with that one. I don't have an issue there. I think Lamar's looked better this year than Justin has, but Josh Allen and Trevor Lawrence, I would feel really good about swapping there. Or Trevor Lawrence and Justin Herbert. I think Trevor Lawrence should be elevated. I think he's looked really good now that
he really has been underwhelming to start the year for me. I think Trevor Lawrence going forward could easily move up in the top tier. I just haven't seen enough from him this year.
If it's based on what you've seen this season, that is totally fair. I guess I'm also sprinkling their pedigree. But if we're going off of what we've seen this year, I'll go back to the original objection. Get Jimmy Garoppolo to seek help. Get him down two tiers. He has looked horrendous. And I don't want to dunk on a guy who's currently like getting checked out in the hospital. He has like, he luckily Josh McDaniels has confirmed he's avoided the serious back injury. Like it seems like he's going to be good going forward, but he's going to miss some time. Garoppolo, like, I'm so glad he's healthy and I'm upset that he got injured. That sucks. But he wasn't playing great before he got injured. He's looked bad, dude. Like he's looked really, really bad.
I think it's a little bit quick to pull a plug on the Jimmy Garoppolo experiment in Vegas. I think there's a lot of problems around Garoppolo that maybe, you know, kind of make him look worse than he actually is. I'm not trying to sit here and say that he's a top 10 quarterback or even a top 15 quarterback.
You're not nuts.
But I do think Jimmy Garoppolo, partly factoring in what he did before coming to Vegas, he's won a lot of games, Parker, and it's really hard to get around that fact. To say that's part of the reason why I have Brock Purdy where he is, because Brock Purdy, he doesn't lose, but he also doesn't win you any games too. So, not
saying you're falling into your own double standard then, because are we going based on their pedigree or are we going based on what we've seen this season?
I would say this: it is 80% what we've seen this season, with 20% with what they've done before this season.
Okay. Then I have no issue. Like, I like most of this list. I think I would consider dropping the guys like Deshaun or Kirk down a little bit more. I would argue Baker should be, I mean, they're all in the same tier. So I would just think, I think Baker and CJ are like the top of could we be better. Gino obviously disappointed me a lot last night. That was very upsetting. I thought he was going to come back and win that game. That sucked. And then in terms of the we're hoping tier, I actually think it's really, really solid. I would argue Sam Howell going to Could We Be Better. He's looked really solid in this Bieniemy system. I want to give him a lot of credit for what he's been able to do this year in what is not a great roster overall. I think there's a lot of good players on it, but it's not a great roster top to bottom. And then Dak I have some issues with, but I think he deserves to be in Can We Be Better. Dobbs is overperformed. Fields is fine. Jordan Love, good. Russell Wilson is barely keeping himself out of seek help. That's the other one I'll say.
The only reason actually why Russell could actually fall into seek help is because of the contract, and that's honestly what they'd be seeking help for, is because they've absolutely, you know, screwed themselves with that whole quarterback contract. But yeah,
they got to find a way to move him. Maybe Carolina takes him after this year, but they don't have any more picks. They're out of first round picks. Yeah. So I don't know.
All right. In terms of, can I get a letter grade for the week, for the hierarchy this week?
I will give you a solid A-. I think you hit all the layups, but I think some of the three pointers you took were a little bit off.
I think I will accept the A-. I would say the Jimmy Garoppolo one, I can definitely see why people think he could be a little bit lower. And the Trevor one and Trevor Lamar could be up. I've been very unimpressed with Lamar Jackson this season, just to begin with. He hasn't been bad. But same goes with Trevor. Just I need to see more. I believe in these players long term. I could easily see Lamar and Trevor being in the We Win Because category later on in the year. And then putting down Justin Herbert to we can compete with anybody, because that's he can kind of go with anyone. I look at Justin Herbert and I see so much raw talent from Herbert each week, despite him having to deal with Brandon Staley, who is arguably the worst coach in football right now. So I think overall, like Parker said, it's a good start to the Hobbs quarterback hierarchy. That is a working title. There will be a new title come next time this segment goes out. So I promise that. With that being said, though, we're going to have to wrap up today's show, because we are a little bit short on time. But before we let you guys go, we, of course, have got to run through our two-minute warning segment. And for this week, I'm kind of running with the theme of this past week in the NFL, because we had a bunch of NFL coaches going against their former teams. We have, like I said earlier in the show, we had Cowboys, Chargers, Kellen Moore going at each other later tonight. We also had Giants, Bills. Obviously, we had Brian Daboll going against his former team in Buffalo last night. And then you also had the big one with kind of the game that really no one cared about. We had New England and Las Vegas. You had Josh McDaniels going against his former team in that one as well. So with the thought of kind of revenge on our minds, what is one team that you can think of right now that would be the most satisfying win for your favorite team right now?
Ooh, Honestly, at first I was thinking like, oh, if Greg Roman signs with the team, just get ready to pounce on that one. No, it's obvious. It's the Giants. The Ravens last year suffered a humiliating week 6 or 7 loss to the Giants over fall break. It was this exact time last year. I was at MetLife for it. It was Wink Martindale's revenge game when all of a sudden the Ravens stopped being able to handle the blitz. Maybe it had something to do with their whole offensive line being hurt, but regardless, I had to hear from that crap for a week. It's the Ravens' last defensive coordinator before their current one, who is still the Giants' defensive coordinator, who looks bad right now, has not been playing great, or has not been getting his guys to play great. I like Wink Martindale. I think he was a great coach for the Ravens, but I think he has passed our time. I think he has passed this era of football, and I would love to see this new Ravens offense punch him in the teeth a little bit.
I like it. See, yeah. For me personally, for the as the Chiefs fan here,
I mean, there's only one answer,
almost.
Right?
No, I don't think it's going to be the answer you think. I really almost wanted to go with the Jets just because of how many freaking Jets fans I had to listen to after that game being like, oh, Zach Wilson nearly outperformed Mahomes. Like, they nearly got them. Like, just to be like, bro, if we played you 10 times.
Zach Wilson did outperform Mahomes.
He didn't because he lost the game. But because the game was so close, people had that mindset. So that was almost my answer for this question. But the actual answer I am going to go for is San Francisco. I think they've been playing so well for, I mean, a number of weeks since obviously the Christian McCaffrey trade midway through last year. But I think many times we honestly give this team not like too much credit because they are a very good team. I mean, we obviously know how many players on their active roster are going to be probably going to Hall of Fame after the careers are done. So it's not like disrespecting the team as a whole, but what it is that people often associate San Francisco with the best team in football when oftentimes not, they're not playing the best competition in football either. So my answer for this one would be San Francisco because once the McCaffrey trade was done, the first team they played with was Kansas City, and Kansas City blew the doors off them in their own building. And then basically since that game, they hadn't lost in the regular season until this past week against Cleveland. So I would love for Kansas City and San Francisco to go at each other in the regular season at some point soon, just to kind of, you know, restate the claim officially that the Chiefs are number one team in football, because it's not Philadelphia right now as well. And I know Parker probably was thinking I would say Cincinnati for that answer.
I was going with the coaching theme. I was thinking you were going to go Commanders just to show that it was Andy Reid and not Bienemy.
Oh no, I got all love for Bienemy. And
oh, I know, but still.
And even if they did play each other, I think the Chiefs would easily beat.
See,
the
I got my
honestly.
Revenge team. I got the Titans to look horrible last week. Yesterday morning. So I'm good.
Yeah, my actual answer would probably be Cincinnati, but I would want to face Cincinnati when they're at their full strength with their full team fully healthy, because they just kind of, they honestly kind of look like a shell themselves to start out the year. So my
they
answer
good last week.
Yeah, they look better. I mean, so my answer for that would be San Francisco. Parker goes with, you said Giants? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Giants.
Ravens, Giants.
Yeah, Ravens, Giants. So those are our answers for our 2-minute warning here on today's show. That is going to wrap it up for this episode of HQI Sports. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back here next Sunday as me and Parker return live to VIC Studio at the 11 o'clock hour on VIC Radio for another edition of HQI Sports. We'll see you next time.